Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to take a look at manifestations of fascism around the world, including, among other places, some of the republics of the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union. In a recent half-hour segment, we talked about the rise of fascism in Russia. Specifically, we talked about Mr. Barkashov's RNE organization, specifically Alexander Barkashov's RNE organization. That's a virulently fascist and anti-Semitic organization in Russia that is apparently gaining power and is growing larger and more powerful with the connivance of the authorities in Russia. As I speak on May 17th of 1998, NATO was recently enlarged almost up to the borders of the former Soviet Union. I do not think that that was a particularly intelligent maneuver, and one of the things that I expect that will do is to enhance Russian xenophobia and ultranationalism, and I think that the already sorely beset former Soviet republics are very likely to go fascist under the twin pressures of isolation from the rest of the world, as well as severe economic distress. And indeed, severe economic distress has been bringing fascism to the fore in many other countries around the world as well. One of the former republics of the Soviet Union in which fascism is once again on the march is Latvia, one of the Baltic republics. We're going to turn for information about the reemergence of fascism in Latvia to the Searchlight magazine. Now, the Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American Spotlight, which is pro-fascist despite its populist pretenses. There's a good discussion of some of the fascist antecedents of the Searchlight in the very important recent book, The Beast Reawakens, by Martin A. Lee, that I've alluded to many times. In the Searchlight's issue of April of 1998, by the way, let me give you the information concerning Searchlight for those of you who might want to get a hold of it. The Searchlight, again, is a British anti-fascist publication. Their address is 37B New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR. Once again, that's 37B New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR. And they have a website, www.slight-light.demon.co.uk. Once again, www.slight.demon.co.uk. And in the Searchlight's April of 1998 issue, a very good issue with a lot of important information, in the Searchlight on the World section, there's discussion of outrage over the recent march through the Latvian capital of the Latvian Waffen-SS, or the veterans of the Latvian Waffen-SS. This article is entitled, Outrage Over Riga SS March. While the Russian government is loath to move against the growing openly Nazi and anti-Semitic groups in Russia, it was quick to complain after the Latvian government allowed hundreds of former SS veterans to parade through the streets of Riga, the capital, on March 16th. Many even wore their old SS uniforms. The organizers of the rally said that the former members of the Latvian Legion of the Waffen-SS were marching in remembrance of their dead. Apologists claimed the Legion was a nationalistic outfit formed primarily to fight the Soviet Union, which took over Latvia in 1940, rather than help the Nazis. The truth is rather different. On the eve of the German invasion of Latvia, a team of pro-Nazi killers was formed under the leadership of a student named Arais, A-R-A-I-S. They set about slaughtering as many Jews and anti-Nazis as they could lay their bloody hands on. Some people say that by the time the first German troops reached Latvia, in some areas there were few Jews left alive to be shot by the execution squads or herded into ghettos and later the notorious Riga concentration camp, a hellhole where thousands of children were butchered. The Latvians, whom SS Reichsfuhrer Heinrich Himmler saw as ethnic Germans, were given many privileges and assistance that Waffen-SS units from other occupied countries never enjoyed. Despite their lofty position in the SS, there were few volunteers for the Latvian Legion, and in its early days it remained based around the RA's murder gang, with the addition of a few criminals and killers who joined after the Nazis took over. Later, most Legion members were conscripts. At the end of the war, in the face of the advancing Red Army, the SS leadership offered safe conduct to Germany to many of the Legion volunteers and their families, again on the basis of their ethnicity and their loyalty to the SS Oath of Allegiance that they had readily taken. They were, in fact, given priority over Wehrmacht troops. At the war's end, many of the Arrays gang interned in displaced persons and prisoner of war camps were spirited away to the USA. Others were reunited into the British intelligence services, and as part of the deal, a number of senior SS men and German occupation civil servants were allowed to settle in Britain. There was outrage when it was revealed a little while ago that some of these Latvian SS men were receiving German war pensions, while surviving victims were forced to live out their years in poverty. The Latvian government's solution was to offer to house both killers and victims in the same old people's homes in Latvia. And please note this recent march of the Latvian Waffen-SS divisions. This particular march in Latvia has caused a major problem because it apparently enjoyed the sympathies of a considerable portion of the Latvian government. Just as in an earlier half-hour segment, we took a look at the support for the aforementioned Alexander Barkashov's RNE organization, so too the recent show of strength by the veterans of the Latvian Waffen-SS appeared to have enjoyed the support of considerable elements of the a considerable number of people in the Latvian government as well. An article about this appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle on Tuesday, April 7th of 1998. This is an L.A. Times story by Richard C. Paddock, P-A-D-D-O-C-K. It's Dateline Riga, Latvia, and headlined, Third Reich Still Casts Long Shadow of Intolerance Over Latvia, subtitled Anti-Semitic Violence Plagues Baltic Nation. The article reads in part as follows. Shards of glass lay scattered on the cobblestone street. The synagogue's heavy oak door and stained glass windows, destroyed by a bomb, were sealed with wood and plastic against the cold. And as police guarded the building this weekend, four dozen Jews met inside to pray and discuss why, once again, they had become the target of hatred in Latvia. This was clearly an anti-Semitic act, said Lubavitch Rabbi Mordecai Glasman. Quote, We will not be intimidated. We will go forward with even more strength and determination in rebuilding Jewish life here, unquote. The bombing early Thursday of the only surviving synagogue in the Latvian capital and a parade through the city last month by 500 Nazi World War II veterans have cast a long shadow over this small Baltic nation. The participation of top government officials in the Waffen-SS Veterans March, along with rough police treatment of ethnic Russian protesters in a separate incident last month, has brought a deluge of international criticism and threatened to isolate Latvia as it seeks closer economic and military ties with the West. The bad news continued yesterday with the explosion of an anti-personnel mine outside the Russian embassy in Riga, dealing a further blow to Latvia's deteriorating relationship with Russia and reducing the likelihood of Latvia joining the European Union in the second wave of enlargement. Skipping down in the story, when the veterans paraded in mid-March through Riga's old city to mark the 55th anniversary of the Legion's founding, they were joined by Army Commander Juris Dalbinsch, D-A-L-B-I-N-S-H, as well as by the head of the Navy, the conductor of the military orchestra, and five nationalist members of Parliament. So again, please note that this particular march by veterans of a Latvian Waffen-SS division obviously enjoyed the enthusiastic support of a number of key officials within the Latvian government, at least one of whom, the head of the armed forces, was dismissed because of that. There was an article about the synagogue bombing in Latvia that was carried in the Financial Times of London that has a significant detail, to my way of thinking, and which raises questions about the possibility of continuity between the rise of fascism in Latvia and the rise of fascism around the rest of the world, including the United States. Research credit on the following does go to a member of the listening audience. This is from the Financial Times of London of Friday, April 3rd of 1998. This is an article entitled Riga Synagogue Bombed, and it talks about the aforementioned bombing in the Riga Synagogue. But skipping down, there's an interesting detail that was not mentioned in the Chronicle account that I read, that in turn from the LA Times. The same synagogue was bombed in 1996. A madman was later arrested in connection with that incident. A few months ago, the synagogue was defaced with a swastika. The act was attributed to an underground anti-Semitic nationalist organization called Perkonkrutz, or Thundercross. Touring the site, U.S. Ambassador Larry Napper condemned the attack and said the U.S. government would send forensic experts from the Federal Bureau of Investigation to help in the inquiry. What I find interesting here is that the FBI was involved in this particular investigation. I wonder what warranted their involvement in the synagogue bombing in Riga. Again, note that Latvia is apparently being bedeviled currently by the rise of a fascist organization called Thundercross. I wonder, and this is pure speculation, and I want to emphasize that, I wonder whether perhaps the presence of the FBI in bombing investigations abroad, such as the FBI participation into the investigation of the AMIA bombing in Argentina, turning up links between the Argentinian police who apparently performed that bombing, and the White Aryan Resistance Organization of Tom Metzger in the United States, to whom some allege that Timothy McVeigh belonged. I wonder whether perhaps some of the international fascist connections to the Oklahoma City bombing, such as Andreas Strassmeyer and some of the other connections that we've talked about in some of the discussions of the Oklahoma City bombing, are in fact under active investigation. I wonder whether some of the international fascist links, which manifested themselves in Oklahoma City as well as in other places, are in fact the reason for the FBI's involvement in that investigation in Latvia, just as I wonder whether perhaps that was the reason for their involvement in Argentina as well. Obviously, this is a speculative point, and I want to emphasize that, but still, I think it is quite interesting to see the FBI involved in these investigations of bombings in foreign countries. And again, I wonder whether some of the international fascist links, which have been documented in connection with Oklahoma City and perhaps other fascist terrorist incidents in the United States, are in fact the reason for the FBI's interest in these foreign bombings. And again, I want to stress that that is an altogether speculative element. Just as we looked at Waffen-SS veterans on the march and resurgent in Latvia, so too the recent reemergence of fascism in Austria has been accompanied by a similarly cheerful face being cast upon celebrations of the Austrian Waffen-SS veterans' heritage as well. In a series that's available from Spitfire about Jörg Haider, the so-called yuppie fascist, whose Freedom Party, itself a vehicle for the rehabilitation of German of Austrian Nazi Party members under Hitler, just as Jörg Haider is enjoying a growing electoral success in Austria, voicing a political agenda or espousing a political agenda which he calls the contract with Austria, in which he is consciously modeling himself after Newt Gingrich of the United States. The contract with Austria has in common some of the anti-foreigner, anti-quote, immigrant-unquote rhetoric which the Republican Party in the United States, the Allianza Nazionale in Italy, the DVU and other fascist and Nazi parties in Germany, the National Front in France of Jean-Marie Le Pen, all of them are engaging in that sort of foreigner and immigrant bashing. One of the things that is driving the growing popularity of these parties is the continued or in some cases growing unemployment and economic malaise in these various countries. As various multinationals, both American and European-based, not only downsize but also relocate manufacturing facilities abroad in order to take advantage of cheaper labor, I expect that the popularity of some of these fascist parties, whether the Republican Party in the United States, the Freedom Party in Austria, the DVU in Germany, the National Front in France, the Allianza Nazionale, I expect their popularity to increase as the growing numbers of unemployed and underemployed and economically pressed are basically told to, quote, they are basically instructed, let them eat fascism, so to speak, paraphrasing Marie Antoinette. Of the relatively sympathetic treatment for celebrations of the Austrian SS's heritage, we're going to turn once again to the Searchlight magazine. This, however, the Searchlight magazine's issue of May of 1998. The Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American Spotlight. The Searchlight's May 1998 issue has an article in the Searchlight on the World section entitled Salzburg Council Backs SS Veterans Campaign. The article reads in part as follows. Actually, the article reads in its entirety as follows. Austrian fascists and militarists have caused an uproar by mounting a campaign against the traveling exhibition The Crimes of the Wehrmacht, which is currently on show in Salzburg. The main organizer of the fascist propaganda effort, which includes a photographic counter-exhibition, is the 200,000-strong Wehrmacht and SS veterans organization, the Österreichische Kameradschaftsbund, or OKB. Many of the pictures in the fascist collection belong to Walter Gross, G-R-O-S-S, a former Austrian prisoner of war in the Soviet Union. Gross served with the rank of Obersturmführer, a first lieutenant, and the 1st Panzer Division Liebstandarte Adolf Hitler of the murderous SS. In defiance of the post-war peace agreements, which strictly forbade the enlistment of former Waffen-SS men into the Austrian armed forces, Gross was recruited into the army and rose to the rank of brigadier after the war. Now retired, he has made a second career as a prominent figure in Austria's voluminous fascist speaker circuit, frequently giving lectures to openly Nazi outfits such as the outrageously misnamed Seminar for Democratic Politics, which has provided a platform for such internationally notorious Nazis as Pedro Varela from Spain and Jürgen Rieger from Germany. Gross's fascist track record has not, however, deterred Salzburg City Council from giving official backing to the OKB, which is the biggest veterans organization in Austria, and its exhibition, which is designed to rescue the, quote, honor, unquote, of the Nazi hordes who laid waste to most of Europe between 1939 and 1945. Incredibly, the city authorities have placed the sumptuous functions and banqueting suite of Salzburg City Hall at the disposal of the OKB free of charge, while denying any kind of political or financial support to the exhibition documenting the Wehrmacht's participation in the Holocaust. In a letter to Prime Minister Viktor Klima, K-L-I-M-A, Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal and researchers Walter Manischek and Alfred Lichtblau have provided evidence of Gross's SS past and have sharply protested at the support being given to the OKB exhibition by prominent politicians, including the mayor of Salzburg and leading city councilors. Their names appear on the list of those backing the exhibition alongside those of hardcore National Socialists. And talking about the revival of sympathy for the World War II-era fascist parties all over Europe, this article goes on to comment, "It is not only in Austria that SS veterans are being feted as heroes. In Hungary, fascists from the Magyar Nemzeti Aravonal, the Hungarian National Front, recently staged a demonstration in Budapest. The MNA, whose paper MNA Tajidzoto, I may be mispronouncing that, is an anti-Semitic hate sheet, sees itself as the elite of the fascist Hungarist movement and the only true successor to the Nazi Arrow Cross movement of the pre-war and wartime periods. The demonstration, in which Nazis from Germany and Serbia also took part, commemorated the Battle of Budapest, in which mainly SS German and Hungarian troops attempted to break out of an encirclement by the Red Army towards the end of the Second World War. Before the march, Nazi organizations, including the so-called Info Telephone in Switzerland, had appealed for would-be participants to go to Budapest, quote, to commemorate the heroes of the Waffen-SS who laid down their lives in the fight against Zionist Bolshevism, unquote, during the war. So again, please note that Latvia is not the only place that veterans of the SS are finding a warm political reception more than 50 years after the end of World War II. I want to note, and again, I am speaking for the benefit of those who eventually hear this program on tape, on May 17th of 1998, I want to note that in the San Francisco Chronicle this past week, there have been, actually counting the reportage concerning Gerhard Fry's electoral success, or the electoral success of the DVU in the former East Germany, specifically in Saxony-Anhalt, there have been a total of 5 different articles in the Chronicle in the space of a little over a week about the reemergence of Nazism in Germany. Now, I say reemergence. In fact, Germany was never really denazified. The institutions in Germany were never purged of their Nazi influence, in a considerable measure because the anti-communist, anti-labor, and pro-eugenic stance of the Nazis endeared them to many powerful elements in the West, such as the financiers and industrialists in the United States and elsewhere who enthusiastically backed Hitler and Mussolini, and some of the eugenicists whose thinking and legislation not only profoundly influenced the Nazi racial laws, but who in turn endorsed those laws and received honoraria from the Nazi-dominated academe in the late 1930s. the most important, or arguably the most important, American eugenics organization, the Pioneer Fund, constitutes an element of political and ideological continuity from the eugenics of the pre-World War II and Hitler period, right on up to the eugenics of the espoused by elements associated with the contemporary Republican Party. One of those articles about the reemergence of Nazism in Germany was carried in the San Francisco Chronicle World section of Thursday, April 30th of 1998. We've touched on some of these developments before, but by way of underscoring the fact that at least some elements of the American media, in this case the relatively staid San Francisco Chronicle, are beginning to become aware of the reemergence of German fascism, I thought I would read part of this article and simply touch on some of the others, including the article in the Chronicle about the DVU's success in Saxony-Anhalt. We have, let's see, one, two, three, four, five articles in the space of a little over a week about the reemergence of Nazism in Germany just in the San Francisco Chronicle. The San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, April 30th of 1998, has the following story by Eric Geiger of the Chronicle Foreign Service. This is datelined Munich and headlined, German Army Struggles with Taint of Nazism, subtitled Extremist Incidents on Rise. The article reads in part as follows. The prestige of post-war Germany's conscript army never seemed higher than after last summer's torrential rains, when 10,000 soldiers toiled for several months to evacuate residents from flood-stricken eastern areas and built millions of dams to contain rain-swollen rivers. The 340,000-strong Bundeswehr was the country's pride and joy. No more. Top brass find themselves facing a growing barrage of charges that the force, originally structured to prevent the creation of an aggressive military class, is cherishing traditions of Hitler's Wehrmacht, regular Nazi-era troops who were not formally connected with the dreaded SS force, and turning it into a playground for neo-Nazis. According to recent media reports, alleged extreme rightist incidents involving army members more than doubled last year, and they keep rising. And skipping down, there's discussion of the hiring of Manfred Raeder, a convicted Nazi terrorist who killed a couple of Vietnamese immigrants with a bomb and spent a long time in prison. Raeder was recently hired to lecture to the elite German Officers Academy, and his organization received some surplus vehicles from the German Army. There's discussion of that in a half-hour segment available from Spitfire, so I'm not going to talk about the Raeder incident. However, talking about the effects of that, this article continues, skipping down. Even so, the Raeder affair, which is being investigated by a special parliamentary committee, has aroused a heated debate pitting those who see the army stuck in a neo-Nazi quagmire against others who believe the force is the victim of a campaign of collective defamation. It's not only young draftees who shout Sieg Heil or sing Nazi songs, commented the Hamburg news magazine Der Spiegel, which has emerged as one of the Bundeswehr's harshest critics. NCOs are among the perpetrators of extreme rightist actions, and officers turn a blind eye because they sympathize or lack the guts to do something about it, unquote. The magazine cited a recent reception at an army barracks allegedly attended by 80 Wehrmacht and Waffen-SS veterans wearing top Nazi decorations, as well as a pamphlet purportedly published by Bundeswehr Armored Corps officers that hailed the Nazis' 1939 Blitzkrieg invasion of Poland as, quote, a convincing acid test for the German tank force, unquote. Not to be outdone, the Hamburg news magazine Stern alleged that at a Bavarian military outpost, soldiers and NCOs regularly held celebrations marking Hitler's birthday on April 20th, 1889, the beginnings of World War II on September 1st, 1939, and the German airborne invasion of the Greek island of Crete on May 20th, 1941. The participants reportedly sang Nazi songs, listened to recorded speeches of Nazi propaganda chief Joseph Goebbels, and watched a viciously anti-Semitic Nazi propaganda movie. The question of whether the army has become a, quote, receiving ground, unquote, for rightist extremism is also being heatedly discussed. Well-known playwright Werner Fritsch, a former draftee, asserted recently in Der Spiegel that far-right youth groups have been urging members and sympathizers for years to sign up for long-term service in the Bundeswehr. I've noted in a eight-part miscellaneous series available from Spitfire, entitled Specialized Knowledge and Abilities, that all around the world, fascist groups are urging their members to infiltrate the police and military, not only to compromise those institutions, but to gain the, quote, specialized knowledge and abilities, unquote, necessary to overthrow the democratic state. By the way, that's true of American fascists in this country, as well as fascists around the world, such as those currently exhorting their members to join the German army. In fact, the German army was never purged of its Nazi influence, and the overwhelming majority of the generals in the Bundeswehr had served with the Wehrmacht under Hitler. This is discussed in, among other programs, a 13-part series entitled Reunited Germany, The New Danger, consisting of 13 half-hour segments. That's available from Spitfire. Also, of the failure of denazification and the reinstitution of Nazism in Germany is discussed in the September 13th, September 20th, September 27th, and October 4th, 1992 installments of the vitally important archive show How the United States Lost the Second World War. And again, that's available from Spitfire. This particular article, again from the LA Times, was printed in the Chronicle on Thursday, April 30th of 1998, and there were five different stories in the Chronicle in a little over a week about the reemergence of Nazism in Germany. The first weekday Chronicle in May, there was an article about the reemergence of German fascism, and that basically reporting on the success of DVU in Saxony-Anhalt. By the way, in a half-hour segment recently recorded, I discussed the electoral success of Gerhard Frey's DVU in Saxony-Anhalt, a subject we're going to come back to in just a minute. That was discussed in an article that appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle, and there was also an op-ed column in the Chronicle on Friday, May 1st of 1998 by E.J. Dion Jr. called Rightist Vote Sends a Warning to Germany. That particular article, once again, in the San Francisco Chronicle, and then the Chronicle of Saturday, May 2nd of 1998, the following day, had the following. This by Paul Geltner of the Associated Press, Dateline Leipzig. German far-rightists mount major rally. First paragraph. German skinheads sang nationalistic hymns at a rally yesterday and cheered speakers who railed against foreigners and Chancellor Helmut Kohl, whom they blame for the country's post-war record unemployment. And that's, again, from the Chronicle of Saturday, May 2nd of 1998. And then on Thursday, May 7th of 1998, there was yet another article about the reemergence of German fascism. This from the Chronicle of Thursday, May 7th, again by Paul, actually Geitner, G-E-I-T-N-E-R, of the AP, Dateline Berlin. Neo-Nazi violence on upswing. German far right has many worried. After being thrown off a train in 1994 by neo-Nazis, Martin Aguiari bought a tear gas pistol. Last November, after a second attack, he added a knife to his self-defense arsenal. All my friends carry weapons now, said the soft-spoken young man who lost a leg in the first attack. I'm not going to create any problems, but if anyone tries to do something to me again, he didn't finish the sentence. Aguiari, from the West African country of Ghana, lives with a German family in the small eastern village of Belzig, or Belzig, B-E-L-Z-I-G. He has become fearful of being victimized and is increasingly frustrated at the assaults, the insults, and prejudice he encounters daily. And things are getting worse in Germany. Just 2 weeks after the far right's best showing ever in a state election in post-war Germany, federal officials confirmed yesterday that right-wing violence is on the rise, especially in the former communist East. The extreme right has been gaining ground across Europe, playing on anti-foreigner sentiments. But the trend is especially disturbing in Germany, given its Nazi past. And in the next half-hour segment, we're going to continue with a discussion of the recent success of the DVU in Germany. That concludes this half-hour segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.